The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Okay, we do have some breaking news here on First Take. According to our Adam Schefter, a trio of head coaches have been relieved of their duties this morning. The Bears' Matt Nagy, the Vikings' Mike Zimmer, and the Dolphins' Brian Flores. It is also being reported that Chicago's GM Ryan Pace and Minnesota's GM Rick Spielman are also out of their respective roles. And with that, we welcome in ESPN's NFL insider Adam Schefter. So, Adam, let's start with Brian Flores. A lot of people were very surprised by this firing. So what can you tell us about this?
I think there have been some feelings within the building and in the organization that something like this was possible, as surprising as it is now that it's come to reality today, Charlie. And I think there's a situation where basically I think there was some disagreement over the fate of some of the assistant coaches. There was a disagreement with Brian Flores and some people in the front office there regarding which assistant coaches would be staying and which assistant coaches would be going. I think there were some discussions about how power would be delegated and decisions would be made. And I think there were enough issues that essentially the Dolphins and their owner, Stephen Ross, felt like the best thing to do was to take the Dolphins in a different direction. Now, the Dolphins go out and look for head coach. And a lot of people have thought, well, maybe Stephen Ross, a big Michigan supporter, would want to poach Jim Harbaugh from the University of Michigan. He laughed at that today, and our Jeff Darlington himself also reported that that's not the plan, that they're not going to hire Jim Harbaugh away from the University of Michigan. Though clearly the Dolphins must have an idea of the type of candidate that they could attract to Miami, because you don't get rid of an established coach like Brian Flores without having potential replacements in mind. As for Brian Flores, I would expect that he will be one of the most coveted coaching candidates in the interview cycle and the hiring cycle that's coming up here in the next few days and weeks. You could look at any team with an opening and say, well, Brian Flores would fit there. He would fit there. He'd fit there. He'd fit everywhere. And so Brian Flores, I don't think, will be out of work terribly long. Maybe he'll have to be a little bit selective in the job that he wants to take coming off the Miami situation. But again, the Dolphins decided to make a change. They're keeping their general manager, Chris Greer, in place. He will help lead the search with Stephen Ross, Tom Garfinkel, the others there in Miami. But Brian Flores now is a coaching free agent, and the Dolphins are in the market for a new head coach.
Yeah, he led the Dolphins to win 8 of their last 9 games. Well, now let's turn our attention to the Giants, because Adam, you said a few weeks ago that you thought his job was going to be safe. That's what you were hearing. But Dan and Ryan just went in on Joe Judge, given his play calling yesterday and how the Giants season ended so tragically. So what is the plan with the Giants moving forward?
Well, Charlie, the plan a few weeks ago was to keep Joe Judge. And the plan still may be to keep Joe Judge, despite the fact that clearly Giant fans are unhappy right now with the team, with the performance. And we'll see what they ultimately decide to do. I think first things first here, if you break down the Giants situation, here's where we are. We expect that the general manager, Dave Gettleman, will step down today, and they will have an opening for a general manager, and they will look to go hire a general manager, and they probably will solicit the feelings of that particular general manager to see how he feels about keeping Joe Judge in place. Again, I think that there is a portion of the Giants organization that would like to keep Joe Judge, but these last few weeks have been terribly embarrassing for the organization. Mm-hmm. There's been a long, rambling press conference that didn't play well in New York and New Jersey. The performance on field has been subpar and embarrassing. And so it'll be up to the new GM to figure out what they're going to do.
All right. Well, Adam Schefter with the latest in the NFL. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Okay, so the Giants certainly out of the playoffs. So let's take a look at the NFC side of things. They'll get things started on Sunday. The Buccaneers hosting the Eagles as they begin their quest to repeat as Super Bowl champs. A pair of old rivals squaring off at Jerry's World. And we'll have our first ever Monday night wild card action as the Rams take on the Cardinals. Okay, Matthew Stafford 0-3 in his postseason career, and he's looking for his huge first career playoff win in his 13th NFL season. Dan, do you still trust Stafford in the playoffs? You're smiling right now. I have to know what's happening here.
I got a hit on one of these, right? Yeah, I do. I honestly do.
So, I know. I'm a little surprised myself.
No, I mean, I think that Matthew's play this season has proven to be stretches of absolutely fantastic football. The first half yesterday was lights out. The second half, people are going to point to those two interceptions. Mm-hmm. I think the first interception, and we can get into a football conversation about this, I think is very similar to a punt. It's 3rd and 17. We're going to throw this ball downfield. Maybe our guy makes a play. I cannot stand Ryan Clark right now. I knew today was going to be a tough day. I honestly feel that way, though. And then the one to Odell, it's an underthrown ball, but I think he's given Odell like a chance, you know, like, hey, I'm just going to launch this one up in the field. This is the 3rd and 17. Four things can happen on this throw. More than likely, you are punting on 3rd and 17. I don't care if you get 10 yards in a short completion. Number one, it's an incomplete pass and you're punting. Number two, you get pass interference. Number three, your guy makes a catch. Or number four, they get an interception and they get tackled right at that point of interception, 50 yards downfield, which is a punt. So, again, I think that the risk versus reward is a worthy one. We've seen three of those in the last month. We've seen two tips that go up at the line of scrimmage and interception. So if it's going to go eight interceptions last month, five of them, I sit there and go, those are just bad breaks. Now three of them are pick sixes. That can't happen. But I trust them. I have a great rebuttal to you, by the way, because I know what you're going to say, and I have a phenomenal rebuttal. I'm ready for you.
Dan, I didn't say anything to you. I listened to you. I allowed you to speak about your friend eloquently, as you did. You know, I say this every time you get an opportunity to talk about.
You did have a very good defense of him, I will say.
Yeah, I say this every time you talk about Matthew Stafford. Every time we do this, I am so I am so excited.
Tanucci, I can see this. Just so you know, and I'll remember it.
Hey, I am so excited that you're my friend because I know I will always be defended. I know that you will always make excuses for me. Last week was the Founders Day, right? It was my Founders Day for Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated. And one of the first things I learned when I was online was excuses. Excuses are tools of incompetence that build monuments of nothingness. Oh. Those who major in their usage are non-achievers, big brother, sir. And you've made nothing but excuses for Matthew Stafford. It's always, well, he threw the pick because it could be a punt or this ball was tipped. Let's go through Titans, 49ers, Packers. Matthew Stafford did not play good. Seahawks, Vikings, Ravens, 49ers. Matthew Stafford did not play good. In the last four games, there is not a game that you can look at and say that Matthew Stafford played an entire football game of four quarters at a high level. Yesterday in the second half, he was out-executed and outplayed by Jimmy Garoppolo, somebody that none of us thinks is a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, right? Oh, wait, what you saying? Wait, go back to the Ravens. What'd you say? But in the second half, guys, he didn't have any incomplete passes. But in the first half, he was trash. Right. Also, go back to the Vikings. Three interceptions in that game. Oh, but one was tipped. One was a high ball. One was this. It was this and that. No, Dan. Matthew Stafford. You ain't John Morant. Matthew Stafford has not played well down the stretch of the season. Yeah. Matthew Stafford has not made us believe in his current play. And now we're going to talk about Detroit, and we're going to look at his 0-3 record in the playoffs, and we're going to say what we've always said about Matthew Stafford. If he had better people around him, he would have won playoff games. I do not care. When I watch Matthew Stafford play right now, I don't see the consistency I need to see for four quarters. Yeah. I see the talent. I see the flashes you've mentioned, but I don't see a quarterback that we can depend on. And Sean McVay's face when Matthew Stafford is walking off the field many times also displays that.
All right, just like you said, I do not care. I do not care. You came on the show today and started to say that not all fourth and ones are the same. All interceptions are the same.
I agree with that.
So we can't sit here and say, well, all these interceptions, they're not all the same. I can give you five of those that aren't on the quarterback, that they're bad breaks, that they're...
I have a question. I have a question for you.
Yes.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Right? So in looking at a season, let's take Aaron Rodgers, for instance.
Right.
He could have had tip balls. Right? He could have just thrown up balls that were punts.
Different offense.
He only got...
It's a different offense.
Man, here, man.
The Green Bay Packers run way more... And also, Aaron Rodgers is a better player. Like, that's not a
You say Matthew Stafford's a top five quarterback, but he could turn it over in eight games, eight times in the last month.
And you're going to continue... And the question is, do you trust him in the playoffs?
Yes.
He's not...
He don't even know. Charlie, you know why he don't
trust him in the playoffs?
You know why he trusts him? Because it's his friend.
I trust
you know what else?
No.
Tom Brady trusted Antonio Brown enough to offer him to live in his house.
And it won him a Super Bowl.
And look what happened.
And it won him a Super Bowl.
Oh, so you're going to let Matthew
Stafford? Yeah, last season it was all good. This Super Bowl. Season, not so much.
Where got him now?
I trust him in the playoffs. I can understand it. It's fair that other people don't because we haven't seen it. But here is my question. There's 14.
It's not about not having seen it. It's about him not playing well now, though.
But here's – no. It is about having seen him. Because I asked you last week, do you trust Joe Burrow? And you said, yes, I do as well. And you said just because of the type of player he is. You haven't seen Joe do it.
He's better than Matthew Stafford, though.
But you haven't seen Joe do it.
And he's more consistent.
Here's what I'm saying. He's not playing. If Joe Burrow was playing the way that Matthew Stafford was playing right now, I would also say, you know what? I don't believe in Joe Burrow. Here's the other thing. One of these guys have been in the league a decade plus. The other one's only been in it two.
I have always, from the jump, come on and talked about the reasons why quarterbacks do things. Maybe their play is good. Here's a reason why. Play is bad. It's not an excuse. There's reasons. There's reasons why these interceptions are happening. I do not believe that all interceptions are the same, and I don't think that we should see them. There's interceptions that are bad decisions. There's interceptions that are bad throws, and then there's interceptions that once the ball leaves your hand, it's not necessarily on you. I'll ask you this. There's 14 cats in the playoffs. Who do you trust then? I mean,
I trust Aaron Rodgers. I trust Tom Brady.
I trust Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick.
So you trust three cats?
Is it Joe Burrow you trust?
I trust Joe.
So you trust four of them. You trust Tannehill?
Yeah, no, I trust Tannehill.
Yeah.
I trust Ryan Tannehill, but I don't trust Tannehill more than Matthew Stafford. I got nothing then, because Ryan Tannehill scored 15 interceptions this year as well.
Ryan Tannehill has been playing with me and you at wide receiver and people that play running back that weren't on the team at the beginning of the season.
So is that an excuse or is that a reason?
It's a reason.
Okay, thank you. So there are reasons why.
Matthew Stafford's playing with Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham Jr., Van Jefferson, and Tyler Higbee.
He's got 5,000 yards and 41 touchdowns.
And he got picks for no reason.
I am not
sitting
here.
Yeah, and it's nothing that new for him either. He's been throwing interceptions pretty much every game for as long as I can remember.
Charlie.
He has been.
I rock with Charlie.
He has been. He's been very inconsistent.
Charlie got Carson Wentz as a quarterback. She ain't got no excuses for nobody.
Yeah.
I am not sitting here saying if someone has no that they have to seed in the playoffs, I agree with that. That is fair. The question was, do I think that he is going to get it done in the playoffs? I believe that he is going to get it done in the playoffs. If I'm wrong, I'm going to sit in here, and I'm going to have another rough Monday morning, and I'm going to need another glass of red wine Monday night. That's what's going to happen.
You're still just on the glass. I'm on the bottle now. After yesterday,
hey,
I'm on the bottle.
All I'm saying is this, man. All I'm saying is this. You are one of the best in the world at what you do.
Thank you.
And actually the best at a lot of things. What you're not rolling on right now is your quarterbacks. You had Baker, Carson, and Matthew. You've been wrong, bro.
Just take the L.
I had Joe.
Yeah, okay, listen, Matthew Stafford, 0-3 in his postseason career. It's his 13th season right now. According to Elias, only four starting quarterbacks have won their first playoff game in their 13th season or later. So the chances are stacked against him. We'll see how it goes. Okay, guys, let's keep it going.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Oh, he is back. Everyone's so excited for this. Ryan, time for some quick takes. Klay Thompson making his long-awaited debut after a 31-month layoff, returning to the floor from separate ACL and Achilles injuries and scoring 17 points in 20 minutes with that win over the Cavs. Ryan, what do you think about Klay's return?
I think it was absolutely phenomenal. This is a guy that's not known for dunking on folks, known for his athleticism, and he came out and showed it right away. He got up 18 shots in 20 minutes. That's the Klay Thompson that we want to see. He'd been chomping at the bit for this opportunity, and he said this was right below winning a championship. Amazing to see Klay back.
And next up, John Morant and the Grizzlies keep soaring to new heights. Morant's two-handed chase down block on Lakers guard Avery Bradley was the highlight of the night. Ryan, is this one of the better blocks that you've seen?
This absolutely is one of the better blocks that I've seen. And I wish y'all could run it back to when Michael Jordan was playing with the Wizards and he got to face the Chicago Bulls and he pinned that thing against the backboard. Then he looked at them boys like, you know who I'm the GOAT. John Morant is the guy who's the top five in the MVP voting right now. This is the team that went on a streak while he was hurt. Now that he's back, he's showing and proving that he's one of the best point guards in the world today.
Really nothing he can't do. Okay, guys, let's go back to football. Taking a look now at the Pro Football Championship odds, courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook. Green Bay and Kansas City leading the way for their respective conferences. Meanwhile, Buffalo has the third shortest odds despite being favored by just 4.5 points in their wild card bout with New England. Okay, with Green Bay and Kansas City as the favorites, Ryan, who do you think is going to have the tougher path to make it to the Super Bowl? The Packers or the Chiefs?
The Kansas City Chiefs. You know why?
Why?
Because they ain't that good. That's why. Because it's not. It's not the Kansas City Chiefs team that we've seen the last 3 years. It's not the Patrick Mahomes that we've seen for the last 3 years. This defense, when you look at the last 3 weeks of the season, isn't playing the caliber of football they were playing during their 8-game
really?
Winning streak where they were holding.
But Ryan, Tyrann Mathieu said that he thought that this version of the Chiefs defense was the best that they've been.
It had been for 7 straight weeks, right? When they were holding people under 12 points per game. But we look, so you go to Los Angeles and you don't have guys like Chris Jones. You don't have a guy like Willie Gay Jr. Lajarius Sneed has to leave for personal reasons and you don't play well there. And then you go and get absolutely shellacked against the Cincinnati Bengals and you walk into Denver. You're fighting for the number one overall seed and playing against a team who has a coach that won't be the coach the next day, playing against a team that won't be playing the next day, that has their bag packed, trying to figure out how to get out of Denver and get to some remote island where they can post Instagram pictures, and you let that become a dogfight. If you don't turn the football over, it's not a huge play by Bolton and Melvin Ingram. Maybe you aren't even sitting at number two for the playoffs. Is this team still really good? Yes. Do I believe this team is still the favorite in the AFC? I do. But this team may have to go on the road for the first time in Patrick Mahomes' playoff career. This team has to play in the first week of the playoffs for the first time in Patrick Mahomes' first playoff career. And I think that is going to be difficult for this team to overcome. Now, if they're sitting in SoFi in February, will I be surprised? Hell no. Will it be difficult? Absolutely.
This is why you're one of the best in the world at what you do, because you do not care about what people think. You are going to keep it 100 all the time and just tell you how to feel. I love that. I agree that it is the Chiefs. I do, and I think a lot of the points that you made, because this isn't the same, you know, kind of overwhelming type of Chiefs that we've seen. And just the AFC is so much more stacked with the Bengals.
Yeah, that's
stacked.
True.
The Patriots are a good football team. Tennessee has the number one seed and hasn't had me. You know, excuse me, they've had me at tailback and not Derrick Henry and their monsters on the outside. Those guys, it looks like injury-wise, are coming back. That's why I think they're the team to beat. But I will say this. The Packers' road got tougher yesterday, and that was when the interception happened by Matthew Stafford to allow the San Francisco 49ers to get
in. Do you think, is San Fran the scariest team in the NFC?
I think that San Francisco is the scariest team in the NFC.
Why?
You know what? No, I'll take that back. I think Dallas is the scariest team.
Okay.
I think when Dallas plays to their absolute A-plus level, they are absolutely suffocating as a football team.
Right.
I think when they're
from a talent standpoint,
yes,
for sure. Yeah.
When they play their best game, they're the most dangerous. San Francisco, I would put second.
Okay.
They're unapologetically who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They never allow the game to dictate or waver who they're going to be. They've got probably one of the most dynamic and unstoppable offensive players in football in Deebo Samuel.
Yeah.
George Kittle is a nightmare. Kyle Shanahan is brilliant and is always going to give his team a chance to play well both offensively in the run game and the pass game. I think D'Amico Ryans, their defensive coordinator, is going to be a head coach in the NFL in less than 5 years. What he has done with their defense is awesome, and that pass rush is getting going. And
right,
you've seen it the last maybe 5 or 6 weeks get going. The reason I say that they're a problem for Green Bay is, number one, if there was going to be one reason why Green Bay does not make it to the Super Bowl, I think overwhelmingly all of us would say because someone ran the football on them, held the ball, controlled the clock,
yeah,
and did not allow Aaron Rodgers to be on the field that much.
The 49ers mm-hmm. can do that.
The 49ers, I feel like, are the best team in the NFC to do that. And then their coaches know each other really well.
Yeah.
Like, Kyle knows Matt LaFleur yeah. incredibly well. He taught him so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is an advantage for San Francisco.
Yeah, and that's what makes that's what makes the playoffs great, though, right? There are teams that are fighting to get in the playoffs. We felt the same way about the Colts. We felt like the Colts would be a tough matchup for a team in the playoffs. And no disrespect.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and then you look, and then you're at halftime of the Los Angeles Rams and the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm thinking to myself, how lucky do these teams in the NFC feel that the 49ers might not make the playoffs. Yeah. Like, they had the opportunity to play the Saints instead of them. And what makes it interesting to me for the Green Bay Packers is, as good as they've been all year, right, as good as their record is, it never felt dominant to me. The quarterback felt dominant, but not the team. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how these matchups fall and who they have to play.
Think about this. So, you know, two things. It's almost like the quarterback and the trust thing. We had this NFL season for a reason. Like, this was the greatest NFL season. And yesterday was probably the greatest Sunday, certainly in my time of ever watching the NFL. We had this, everybody was in it till the end for a reason. There's a lot of really, really, really good football teams, and I don't know if there's anybody that's flat out dominant. I'll say this,
it
Charlie.
It felt like that the whole second half of
correct.
The season, really.
Yeah, so, like, that's, I think there's so many teams that are the teams to beat, so to speak. And I'd say this, and we talked about this a little bit this morning. In the NFC, the only team that I would be shocked if they made it to the Super Bowl would be the Philadelphia Eagles. I think anybody else in the NFC can make it. And then in the AFC,
Pittsburgh Steelers.
I think the Steelers would be the team that would shock me. Maybe New England in that conversation a little bit-ish, but I still think they can get hot for three games. So think about that. 14 teams, and I think there's only two teams that we would really walk away being shocked if those teams were representing their conferences in the Super Bowl.
Both happen to be from Pennsylvania.
I think about that.
I want to go back to Dan's comment about the Cowboys. He said he thinks they're the scariest team in the
NFC. If they play their best.
Well, if they play their best. But the way you speak about the Niners, I feel like if Debo Samuel gets going and the Cowboys can't get their rush defense where it needs to be, I feel like the Niners are scarier than the Cowboys.
Do you think
the Cowboys are as scary?
So here's what happens with the Cowboys. The Cowboys have the most stars.
Right.
Right. The Cowboys have the most elite-level talent-wise players. Right. We look at Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, the two running backs. Defensively, you have Gregory, you have Lawrence, you have Michael Parsons, you have Trayvon Diggs. And so you're thinking about those players making splash plays and playing at the height of their game. The thing that makes the San Francisco 49ers so good is that they are so self-aware.
Right.
When they walk into a stadium, they say, this is who I am.
Yep.
And this is who I'm going to be no matter what the score on the scoreboard says. And you have to outplay me in that arena.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you don't want to play a team that can be that physical and we're not back
away
from it.
Would you agree with this? I think the difference between those teams, there's a lot of differences. I think the San Francisco 49ers can win with their B game this weekend.
Yeah.
I really do. I think they can go into Dallas and win with their B game. I don't think Dallas can beat San Francisco playing their B game. I think Dallas has to play their A game. That's why I think they're scarier. Because if they do, they are – like, here's the reality. I have no idea what to do with Micah Parsons as an offensive person. I don't know how I would try and slow him down. I think he's that incredible as a player. But the Cowboys need to be hitting on all cylinders to go on their run. Make no bones about it, Dallas. Mm-hmm. It is Super Bowl or bust with the talent.
100%.
But I think San Francisco can play like a B-plus game and still win.
Micah Parsons has so much Troy Polamalu in me.
Yeah.
In him.
Ooh.
To me. Like, just so versatile. He's a player you have to game plan for. Mm-hmm. And I think Kyle Shanahan is the right guy to try
100%.
To do that.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, the physicality of the Niners is next level. And this is interesting. This is the first time the 49ers and the Cowboys have met in the playoffs since the NFC Championship game in 1995.
No way.
Yeah,
shut
when
up.
The Cowboys won the Super Bowl.
Ain't so no way.
I was a little kid then.
Trying to say I wasn't?
College or something back then.
Yeah, right.
Bro, I was like six.
You were not born.
Oh, wait, 95. I was like 16.
We're going to have a debate later. Who's older? Who's wiser? Okay, guys, let's keep it moving.
Go.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
And Nick Saban knows a thing or two about winning national titles. We know that. He's already won seven of them as a head coach, the last six with Alabama. And he's fared pretty well against his former assistant coaches, posting a 25-1 win-loss record, which includes four wins over Georgia's head man, Kirby Smart. Yep, Saban has done pretty well against his assistants. So can Kirby Smart come out on top tonight? That is the question of the hour. Dan's here along with RG3. So, Rob, welcome to First Take. Starting off, I got to ask you how much pressure, you just heard me talk, is on Kirby Smart to beat Nick Saban in Alabama this time around.
You asking me?
Yes, yes, you. How much pressure is on
Kirby Smart? Yes, yeah. So, it shouldn't be any more pressure than any coach trying to win a national championship. But to be honest with you, always going to be 100. It's a gargantuan amount of pressure on Kirby Smart. Mm-hmm. He has 41 seasons of championship drought, 7 straight losses against Alabama, the heartbreaking 2nd-and-26 walk-off touchdown from Tua to Devontae Smith in the 2018 national championship game. And they're having to answer questions about that all week long. And honestly, they've kind of been in denial, trying to play it down and make it seem like it's really not a thing, but it is. So when you talk about it from that standpoint, no pressure, no diamonds. We'll see if this time around Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs can get that national championship ring.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure. I also think it's warranted. You're the head coach at Georgia. This is one of the 5 premier coaching opportunities in all of college football. It's obviously one of the kings of the SEC. Kirby Smart has had a top 5 recruiting class every year that he has been there. The overall overwhelming thing in college football when it comes to determining success or not is the amount of players or the players that you absolutely get, and Kirby has that. RG3 makes a great point of some of the close misses that this football team under Kirby Smart has had. I also think this, they've got a historically great defense. These defenses that Georgia has does not come around often. And then Alabama is a weaker version than we have seen in years past. They are not the dominant Alabama that we have seen. And I think that's why, given how good Georgia is, the expectations of this football team, how close they have been in the past, the history of Kirby Smart and his recruiting, and the, I guess, non-dominant aspect or non-dominant form that we have in Alabama, there's a tremendous amount of pressure for him to finally get this done, for somebody truly to finally get this done and overcome Alabama and Nick Saban.
Yeah, and this is a rematch from the SEC. Go ahead.
No, I think Dan's right about a lot of what he just said. But Georgia has to throw all of that away. They have to come out, play free, play fast like they've done against everybody in the country, not named Alabama. When you look at their schedule and the way that they played like Tarzan against the rest of the country, right, and came out and played like Jane against Alabama in the SEC championship game. So I think they have to focus on today, not worry about all of the other garbage or all the other baggage that's been going on, and that'll allow them to really come out and play their best football.
I think it's a good point, RG. Like, I'd say this, if you watch this Georgia team, because I want to hear your opinion on this, it almost seems like they have moments when they play Alabama, lulls in the game where whether it's they have a lead and they come out in the second half and play poorly, where it's just they allow a 15 or 20 minute stretch in the game where they just don't show up, and Alabama seems overwhelming in the football game to me. So, like, how do you think, like, what would you say to the Georgia team, I guess, for their mental kind of mindset going into tonight?
Yeah, Dan, I think it's simply they can't get into the lull of, oh, my gosh, here we go again.
Yeah.
Right? They had a 10-point lead in the SEC championship game, and then Alabama just started steamrolling them, throwing the ball down the field to Jamison Williams, getting explosive plays. So if I'm Georgia, I just look at it like this. Our best pass rushers are our linebackers. We got to get them involved somehow. We have to get Bryce Young on the ground. The teams that have played them well, Texas A&M beat them 4 sacks. Auburn, LSU, Arkansas all played them close. They had 7, 4, and 4 sacks in those games. So that's the recipe. Go out, allow Stetson Bennett not to have to make too many plays. Don't go blow for blow with Bryce Young and company. And I think Georgia will walk out victorious.
Yeah, and you talk about all these sacks, but they did not have 1 sack against Bryce Young in the SEC championship game. So that's something they're definitely going to have to work on tonight. So, Robert, who wins tonight?
Oh, you know, I've been talking up Georgia all day and yesterday and the day before that. But at the end of the day, Alabama wins this game. I think Alabama wins. They've already won the game. I think they'll win the game on the field tonight, but they've already won the game off the field. As I talked about, the 41 years without a national championship, all the baggage that Kirby Smart and those guys are having to deal with. And the last time I checked, Alabama still has the Heisman Trophy winner, modern day's very own Bryce Young. He's the Houdini out of the pocket. They still have Will Anderson, the best defensive player in the entire country. They still have the game-breaking speed of Jamison Williams on the outside. And I think their offensive line, although they have been banged up, has come in way more confident after 2 games in a row where they completely dominated the line of scrimmage against Georgia and Cincinnati. So I think Alabama gets the job done.
All right, your opinion seems to be that of almost everybody else. RG3, thank you so very much. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thank you, guys. God bless.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Okay, the Colts are out, but the Eagles are still flying high despite closing out their season with a 51-26 loss to the Cowboys on Saturday. Philly making the playoffs as the number 7 seed and will be matched up in a NFC wildcard game against Tom Brady and the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers. The Eagles have won 7 of their past 10 games and were undefeated in December, which did help them clinch a playoff berth. Now, they lost their first matchup to the Bucs earlier this season, 28-22. So, Dan, do you like Philly's chances against Tampa Bay?
If they run for over 250 yards, yes. Now, that sounds outrageous, but this is the team that led the NFL in rushing this year. Mm-hmm. And Tampa Bay has long been thought of as a team that you cannot nor should run the football against. And I think we've seen a little bit of cracks in this defense with the ability to run the football against them. You get the ball out on the perimeter, utilize quarterback run, utilize some of that zone read. I think there's a chance that Philly can play to their style, kind of control the football game and be really good in the red zone. Dallas Goedert has got to have an absolutely fantastic game. I think it's unlikely. Yes, I think this is a...
Yeah.
Listen, if you got to play Tampa, this is the week to play them. This is the week to get them because they are as unhealthy as you can be for a team going into the playoffs. The challenge for Philadelphia is going to be defensively, and I think it's twofold. Are they going to take Darius Slay and match him wherever Mike Evans goes?
Right.
I don't think that's their identity as a defense. I would, zone or man. And I don't think they have anybody that can slow Gronk. I really don't. I don't think they have anybody that can lock Gronk down. Now, they proved me wrong. Then they got a chance to do it. But that's the blueprint, at least in my mind. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I do not think it's going to happen. I think the fact the Eagles made the playoffs is an incredible accomplishment. Do I think it can happen? Yes, it's unlikely, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unlikely, but it's the playoffs, right? It's the playoffs, and the Philadelphia Eagles have found a way to get there. And I think Nick Sirianni making a decision that we're going to become a run-first football team, that it's not about look how cool I can be as a play caller. It's not about look at the creative ways I could design ways to push the football down the field. It's about how can we be most effective, and that's with the zone read. That's with the run involving Jalen Hurts. And it's also understanding that Dallas Goedert is a top pass catcher at the tight end position. Devontae Smith can find ways to get open on the outside. The difficult part here is it is, again, one of those things. We haven't seen these people do it, right? We've seen Bruce Arians win the Super Bowl. We've seen Tom Brady win 7 of them. We haven't seen the Jalen Hurts, Nick Sirianni combination do those things. And so that gives you pause, but it's okay. Can you stay true to your identity?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be an identity game for the Philadelphia Eagles because so many people talk themselves out of trying to run the football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But we've seen teams do it if they commit to it.
Right.
I'm with you. I don't believe that it's likely. And the question is, do I like their chances? Well, absolutely not. I don't like their chances. But this is about the Philadelphia Eagles understanding who they are, walking into the stadium, believing that that's enough to win, and sticking to it. Getting this game to the fourth quarter and saying, okay, Jalen, we now have given you an opportunity to get over the hump.
Yeah.
Can you do it? It's difficult when you're facing the GOAT, though.
We thought Jacksonville upsetting Indy was a massive upset yesterday, which it was. If the Eagles beat Tampa and Tom Brady, that would be equally as impressive.
No way. Nope. Not going to let you off the hook with that. Nope.
Bro,
mm-mm.
You don't think that if the Eagles beat Tampa Bay, it is...
I do not.
How many wins do the Eagles have against winning teams?
As big as the Jacksonville Jaguars beating the Colts last week?
This is a Tampa Bay team that won the Super Bowl.
But they're also depleted.
It's not that Tampa Bay team.
You know, the Colts had all of their weapons, so it's kind of hard to make that comparison.
You wouldn't be shocked if Brady lost to Nick Sirianni?
I'd be shocked, yes. Not as shocked as I was yesterday.
No. I think it would be just as big an upset. The Eagles are, I've said this, are incredible.
I mean, it will certainly shake things up, that's for sure.
It would, I don't think the Eagles have a win against a team with a winning record this season. Or at least on their, like, stretch of winning streak. Right. So we're talking about a team that doesn't have a win against a team with a winning record would have to go and beat the guy who's got 7 Super Bowl rings, is the defending
history
Super Bowl champion.
History don't play football,
I agree with that.
Yeah, they're 0-6 versus playoff teams this season, the second worst record by any playoff team versus the playoff.
That would be an enormous upset.
No. It would be an enormous upset. It is not as big as the team with the number one overall pick next year in next year's draft beating the Indianapolis Colts. Not as much of a – this is a playoff team still. This is a team that has gotten there. We've watched wild card teams win football games. We've watched wild card teams win Super Bowl. The Green Bay Packers in 2010. The Pittsburgh Steelers in 2005. We've seen it happen. I don't believe the Philadelphia Eagles are that team, but I believe they have a style of play that can allow them to stay close, and they're also playing a team that's depleted. If this is the all 22 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I don't think this game is close. Yeah. I don't think this is a conversation. But in this conversation where we are now, the Eagles have a chance to keep it close and maybe make plays in the end to win.
A lot depends on, does JPP play? Does Shaq Barrett play? Does Levante David play? Does Leonard Fournette play?
Oh, that's huge.
You know,
right.
Like if all those guys played,
it's a different game.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about running the ball. The Eagles were first in rushing this season. The Bucs, meanwhile, third in their rushing defense. Mm-hmm. But I think something else that's really going to play into it, I think the Eagles have to get off to a quick start. They're known to get off to those slower 100%. Starts against the Bucs. You absolutely cannot do that.
I see you.
Charlie, thank you so much. Guys, I'm just trying to hold my own against you. I'm in the middle for a reason.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Wild Card Weekend is such an appropriate name because this weekend was absolutely wild. It came down to the last 2 seconds to really determine the playoff picture. So with that, Ryan, what in your opinion is the biggest playoff surprise?
Well, guys, you know, the great thing about TV is sometimes you can lie. And you and I held accountable. Early on, I said I expected the Pittsburgh Steelers to be in the playoffs. I lied. I didn't expect that. It's totally a surprise that the Chargers and that the Raiders, they almost tied. Brandon Staley, hey, he messed it up. They don't tie. How about that? The Indianapolis Colts go down to Jacksonville. That's a for sure win. I bet my entire job on it. Go figure. The Jacksonville Jaguars win. And the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Browns and the Ravens, as I predicted, to finish the season. And so, am I happy? Absolutely. Was I sure it was going to happen? Hell no. But guess what I did when we first came on the show? I said I knew it was going to happen. Why? Because y'all can't hold me accountable. This ain't court. There's no perjury. I can say whatever hell I want. And so in the first segment, I believe they would get there. In this segment, I'm surprised. Guess what? The people that was watching in the beginning probably ain't watching now. So nobody knows. Sorry.
I didn't follow that. I'm laughing. Oh, man. I love how you told the truth, because I remember a couple times this year where I was like, the Steelers are not a good football team. But I'm going to say the Tennessee Titans.
What part of it, though?
That they're the one seed.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I think that they were, again, we talked about them a lot in September and a lot in October because they were healthy and they were so different than everybody else because the way that their defense was playing and they had those first round picks in their front defensive line that became dominant. A.J. Brown was becoming this dominant receiver and Julio Jones was a little bit healthy and then Derrick Henry. So, like, those three skill position players were so special. And then that defense that, you know, I think last year gave up some head-scratching plays was becoming a dominant defense. Kevin Byard was in the running for defensive player of the year. And then they dealt with injuries. And at some point, as RC knows, like injuries, usually the best teams at the end of the season are the healthiest teams at the end of the season. And I was a person, I didn't doubt the Titans. I just kind of placed them on the back burner because the Colts had gotten so hot and those stars were not there for Tennessee. And I was for sure that someone else was going to get the number one seed and that first round bye in the AFC because of that. And all they did was win and win and win with this player and that player. And something like 90-something guys ended up playing for their team.
88 players,
which is an NFL record, if I'm correct, Charlie Wright. The fact that not only you got in the playoffs, like think about them in relation to the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay, so I have a question then. How can you say that, with all that being said, that Matt LaFleur is the coach of the year with having Aaron Rodgers, with having a team that's been relatively healthy offensively, obviously they have some defensive pieces.
No, they ain't been healthy offensively.
Who's been hurt?
Hoover.
Who's been hurt?
That's a vacuum.
So
David Bakhtiari.
Hoover Dam. He's been out all year.
Herbert Hoover, president.
Right. Aaron Jones missed, a week or two? Devontae Adams been very healthy.
Right.
Alan Lazard's been healthy.
Correct.
You've been healthy at the quarterback position. You do lose Robert Tonyan.
Right. Lost
Tonyan.
So that
was big. But when you look at what the Tennessee Titans have overcome as compared to the Green Bay Packers, Mike Vrabel has to be your coach of the year.
I think Mike Vrabel is second in my voting. I think because of what Matt LaFleur endured this offseason that Mike Vrabel did not have to endure, because of the greatest challenge for Matt LaFleur this season was to keep this football team together so they were able to perform on the field. And the balance of knowing that the front office had chosen somebody other than the quarterback, the quarterback being obviously upset about it, and the balance of keeping that relationship okay while also winning football games without their Pro Bowl left tackle, losing their superstar young offensive lineman in Elkton Jenkins, losing their superstar corner in Jaire Alexander, losing their best pass rusher in Za'Darius Smith. I think that with people aren't giving Matt LaFleur the credit, what he had to manage all season.
I think it's because of the quarterback, though. Right?
When we look
at the quarterback, you expect
that type of excellence.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we could probably debate this for a while, but I have to ask you, because tonight we have the national championship game, Alabama, Georgia, rematch
Bamble.
The SEC championship. Who are you picking? There you go.
Bamble.
What quarterback is my friend that you say I'm too friendly to?
Carson Wentz, Matthew
Carson
Stafford.
Wentz,
where did Matthew Stafford go?
Georgia.
Go Dogs.
Okay, I like it.
Go Dogs.
Georgia has the better team, but when you look at Bama, they've got the coach, they've got the quarterback. It's hard to really pick against
them. I think it's hard to think that Georgia is going to play that bad of a game against the same opponent again.
All right, we'll see how
it ain't got to be that bad. It just got to be 1 point
Everybody,
less.
Everybody, thanks for watching. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll see you tomorrow.
Roll Tide!
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.